You are listening to Radio Albion.
Welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson. It's the 24th of June, 2020. And some very dark days for the Western world. As always, I want to thank my donors and continue to ask for assistance. As for people like me who are independent researchers, our life has been getting worse and worse as time goes on. For those of you who have donated, I truly appreciate it. And the only reason I'm here is because of you. I want to talk about a few things. I'm going to stick to the United States today. It's about time I dealt with the changes in American, at least how the media are presenting our political options. The introduction of Marxism, for example, as a major force in American life, all from a phony story about a policeman who didn't kill anybody. But I want to start off with just briefly talking about John Bolton's book, which I read. The Room Where It Happened, Whitehorse Memoir. He's been trashed by it all over the world, not just in the U.S. The South Koreans, and I believe the Japanese, have also condemned him for releasing information or distorting information that he had no right to talk about in public. And if you look at the reviews, sympathetic reviews of the book, It's almost surreal. You know, we know that the regime will do anything to get rid of Donald Trump, will attack him in any way possible. This has never happened before. Bolton, and I just finished watching an interview with Bret Baier on Fox News, where he really does grill him on some of his terrible inaccuracies. But this is typical of a neocon. If you look at the YouTube, there's almost 5,000 comments, and almost every single one condemns Bolton. It's, you know, because he doesn't come off as genuine, and his arguments simply don't fit together. And Bret Baier does a good job of bringing out the contradictions in what he talks about. Let me give you just a quick example. The media is reporting that not only did Russia somehow, by some mysterious way, rig the election, but so did the Chinese. And the way that this is being reported is that Trump had approached the Chinese for electoral assistance. But what he really means is that for various reasons, China began to buy more soybeans from Midwestern farmers. Now, why this would matter even for just a man who hadn't even been elected yet, why this, you know, these policies take some time to be formulated, you can't just formulate them overnight. That is not asking China to help you win the election. That's the kind of logic that exists here. He believes that because of that, because Trump was promoting the interests of Midwestern soybean farmers in China, therefore, he wanted China to help rig the election, and that's how it's being reported. Other thing he says is people who've been listening to me for a while know the whole Igors and Western China, the concentration camp mythology. Of course, they simply don't exist. And Bolton is just telling people that he told Xi that, building those is perfectly okay. He has no problem with that. This is his personal recollection. No one else noticed this. At least one ambassador under oath said it's not true. And of course, there's none there anyway. Let's go back to my show on that ridiculous claim in Western China. Claiming that the concentration camp is perfectly okay. This is again, and but that's how it's being represented in the press. That even going to the Turks, that he was gonna rig any, the Turkish company has been violating, Iran sanctions, and he was going to, assist, the Turkish company, and therefore, Erdogan, is gonna help him win the election too. So now you have three countries that he's, so anytime he does a favor of someone, or anytime he intervenes on behalf of one country or another, even if it's not done on purpose, it must mean that he wants them to finance his election campaign. Of course, what he doesn't notice is that the president can unilaterally pick and choose which companies can follow sanctions and which cannot. I have a paper on that subject for those of you who, in any detail. Then he claims that Trump wants to serve more than two terms. And the basis for this? Because he overheard a conversation with President Xi, again, China, who said something along the lines of the U.S. has too many elections, and Donald Trump nodded politely. Therefore, Trump wants to serve more than two terms. Another claim that he was unaware that Great Britain was a nuclear power. No educated person is unaware that the UK is a nuclear power. So that's simply a stupid statement. To think that Great Britain doesn't have nuclear weapons or nuclear energy is laughable. And again, the evidence for that is just as weak as everything else. He asks, Trump had asked if to what extent was Finland a satellite of Russia? Which is a legitimate question, because they were for a very long time. Satellite may be too strong, but Bolton reports this as Trump believing that Finland was a part of Russia. That's how it's being reproduced in the press. Finland always had a forced neutrality after World War II. It was a part of the Russian Empire for a long time, but had a forced neutrality after the war. Finland, of course, being on the German side, and so she was rendered very harmless to Soviet interests. So he would have been right 40 years ago. But to say that satellite means a part of is typical American media. That he wanted the U.S. to leave NATO, which I think would be a wonderful idea. Which, of course, for Bolton is outrageous. I don't know how that's a problem. Or anything to be upset about. That Trump wanted to invade Venezuela, which, of course, that was Bolton's idea. I mean, this is how it's being represented in the press here. And that, as watchers of Saturday Night Live will remember, that no one likes Trump internationally and they make fun of him behind his back. The truth is, of course, that's exactly Bolton's treatment. When President Bush named Bolton as the ambassador to the UN. There was 100 former U.S. envoys signed a letter urging senators to reject the nomination. No one likes this guy. I mentioned the Japanese and the South Koreans who've said that this man simply isn't credible. If you look at the, just read the YouTube reviews or the YouTube comments, every single one says this doesn't make any sense. This is being released to derail his election. That this is neocon nonsense. And really, as far as, you know, a lot of this stuff, the evidence for all of this is non-existent. You read this thing and you kind of had to be there. He recollects a interpreter telling him something in the middle of a conversation. He put that all together later on as evidence. To have the Chinese buy more soybeans means he wants them to help them win the election. I mean, this is a twisting of logic beyond belief. So ultimately, they're either absurd or they're based on unproven hearsay. It's as bad as Bolton's career. Now, as far as some of the information in there, the judge, because there was going to be an injunction on the book, and the federal judge said, the court is persuaded that defendant Bolton likely jeopardized national security by disclosing classified information in violation of his non-disclosure agreement obligations. That's a very harsh thing to have said to you. It's allowed to be published. He will not get a dime from it. So he's already been penalized for this. And he may be open to more civil suits later on. Now, the only reason I think he would release a book like this and the legal department of his publisher would do this is if he has assurances from very powerful people that this is, he doesn't have to worry about it. You know, again, for Bolton to try to list all of the things that Trump is ignorant about, this is a man who said that there was no such thing as the UN and called the U.S. the world's only real power. That if the 38-story UN building lost 10 stories today, it wouldn't make a bit of difference. This is a man who laid out a plan for his first strike against North Korea. That UN diplomats saw him as extremely arrogant and brittle. You know, this is not, you know, ultimately, you know, the book is nothing but hearsay, thrown together very quickly and rushed into publication before the election, when Trump is apparently at his weakest. Because as of today, I think, according to the American polls, Biden is really blowing him away. Now, I don't know how true that is. The regime lies about polls all the time. If Republicans think that he can't win, they won't go to the polls. So it'll be a self-fulfilling prophecy. Anyway, as far as everything else is concerned, it was at least in 2000. I said in an article, I said, the war is over and we've lost. Now it's just the ashes being blown away by the wind. And this is why nothing happening right now really has interest in me very much. But this is fully understandable. You know, when they burned Notre Dame Cathedral, it was the same kind of idea. Well, sure. Very few people there are literate enough to even know what it is or understand why it's valuable. And that nothing was going to happen to the saboteurs. In fact, I'm surprised that it's taken this long. But this is a private sector, corporate, purely economic takeover of American life. What leftist ideology was implicitly is now explicit. Leftism is now the official ideology of the American regime at all levels. And anyone going against it will be punished. You cannot have a job or even a bank account if you go against the system. I know many friends of mine have lost their bank accounts recently. most depressing thing, though, is that as America burns, there's no opposition to leftist violence. I mean, those of us who've been, you know, who are, you know, anti-American in a lot of things, you know, it's not the reason we wanted it to burn. It's being burnt for all the wrong reasons and by the wrong people. But it's very depressing that no right-wing organization is there at all. There aren't two sides to this. There's just factions among the left. The entire corporate elite, with almost no exceptions, every university, every media outlet, liberal and conservative alike, have joined with the left. The new slogan is systemic or institutional racism. Now, I don't think they know what that means. That's been said over and over and over again. When the media invents a buzzword for these people. Institutional racism or systemic racism means that it's written into the very constitution of the institution of American life, whether it be corporations or government or whatever. This is either an explicit or implicit aspect of how people do business. Of course, it is officially illegal for there to be any institutional racism. And it's proven by the fact that the entire corporate elite are on their side. So I'm not sure how these people can talk about systemic racism while they are raking in money and not being punished for what they're doing. The regime sides with the rioters. The regime created the rioters. There is nothing new there, nothing interesting there. I've been saying this for decades. Racism exists, but only against whites. I have never met a man in my entire life that dislikes someone because of skin color. Because if that were true, if I were to go get a tan, he would then hate me. Then when I would lose a tan, he'd like me again. It's nonsense. It's a propaganda marketing tool. That's never happened. No one has ever hated someone for just that reason alone. There's always some theory behind it. But the only people getting arrested are whites who defend their property. And all dissenting opinions are censored without mercy. Which is proof, of course, that the only racism that exists is against white people. White people are attacked based entirely on skin color. There's never been a time where a black man has had that problem. It must be nice to be able to blame your problems on racism. Never having to prove anything. And for a successful black to talk about that kind of racism, how heroic are they that they survived it and thrived as a result? It's in their interest to talk like this. It makes them seem heroic and justifies black failures in this country. But what bothers me the most, again, is that the right has failed entirely. If any right-wing group did what the left is doing now, they'd be mass arrests and the total destruction of their organization. This is proof that the left is financed by the elite. Police have been ordered to stand down in areas of cities given over to rioters. They've not won it, they've been given it. The system and the far left are now one and the same. I've been saying this for decades. It was Nancy Pelosi and Charles Schumer stayed on their knees for 9 minutes to honor a violent convict, George Floyd. They wore this crazy African cloth and bowed their heads in worship. No other man or entity has ever been worshipped like that in Congress, not in its entire existence. It's laughable. When a people is defeated, nation is defeated, it's forced to pay a tribute. America has been defeated. So when rioters will pillage the Apple stores everywhere, Apple pledges $100 million for black causes, including Black Lives Matter. Again, this is the complete opposite of white supremacy. It's black supremacy. The killings that these rioters have engaged in have led to no arrest. Yet Mr. Fields, the charger in Charlottesville, will sit in prison until he dies, who is an innocent man. The Charlottesville organizers are still being sued civilly on the grounds that it was a planned violent event. But of course, Antifa takes over an entire downtown area and they're praised. This is what you need to know institutionally about the difference in treatment. It means that the only real dissent is from the nationalist right. It has been interesting to me when protests have been called peaceful, when you can actually see in the background that it's violent. The level of arrogance to claim that white supremacists, they never have any name or institutional, you know, there's no body that's ever mentioned, just thrown out there. And they're the ones who are the cause of the violence. But they bring out something that stupid. It's like the Russia collusion issue. I mean, it's mindless. There is no evidence for it. It's simply thrown out there for simple-minded people to grab onto. They actually said that white supremacists are wearing rubber masks to appear black. It's not really the black people. Although Antifa is mostly white. But of course, there is no anti-black racism. This has not existed in this country. It's impossible to mix two groups as racially radically different as whites and blacks and expect anything good to happen. Especially when blacks have been told and are born and raised with the ideology that whites owe them, that they're trying to keep them down all the time. Racism is a mystic force that explains why non-whites commit almost all violent crime in America, why the black family has all but disappeared. It's a way for the left to avoid pointing the finger at those responsible. Whites don't think in terms of race. Only when they're licking the boots of a black man. But otherwise, they don't think in terms of race. Everyone else does, though. Non-whites assume that whites think in racial terms, just like they do. They do not. We've been born and raised with this driven into our minds. If the new saint joins George Floyd, a violent criminal. Now the story doesn't make a whole lot of sense. For passing an alleged forged $20 bill, you don't usually test the $20 bill. Even if you do and you find that it's fraudulent, you don't usually call the cops on that. And even if you do call the cops on that, what was he, just waiting around for them? He was arrested for other things. He resisted arrest, was forced to the ground where he died. Floyd had been arrested just a few years ago in an armed home invasion. He forced his way into some woman's house and threatened her with a gun before robbing her. And he got away with a 5-year sentence due to a plea bargain. And no one cares about Tony Timpa, a guy who I've never heard of prior to the George Floyd thing. putting him as a white man, killed by cops, who were laughing at him in a similar knee hold. He was white, so no one knows who he is. Floyd had 3 times the fatal dose of fentanyl in his body when he died. And this fact has been known since the preliminary results of the autopsy were released on May 28th. So the press knew this and promoted the lie that Floyd died as a result of police brutality in what was an approved hold, a normal hold, where he could move his head and neck and talk. Any hold where you can talk and move your head and neck is not a fatal hold. Now, there's been talk of some very strange oddities in the arrest. I've mentioned some of this before. The idea that the police officer is not the same guy who's in prison. There was behind one of the videos, there are gas prices that are not today's gas prices. That their badges aren't the same. And of course, someone very special pointed out to me that the police car had a vanity plate that says police on it, which I've never seen in my entire life. Now, how much of that is relevant will be discovered later. It was definitely a setup, but no policeman killed George Floyd. George Floyd was near death anyway. White America has pumped trillions of dollars into black infrastructure all over the world. White America condemns itself. It destroys its own cities. Its media invented stories to justify black violence. It's lied about black crime, instituted affirmative action, with corporations engaged in policies costing billions to support non-white interests. White America has refused to arrest or punish those that burned down its buildings. They fund the same groups who want to destroy them. White America lost 300,000 in a civil war, ostensibly to free black slaves. It's fired millions of white people for daring to complain about any of this. White America almost literally fears being called racist more than anything else. And yet, with all of this, complaints remain the exact same. Institutional racism. That simply can't be. Just as importantly, big tech decides what presidents can communicate to their people because they banned several of Trump's campaign ads, which is very illegal. Especially, you know, he is the presumptive nominee. It simply can't be done. But what's the truth of the matter, though? Well, the guy to go to in this respect is Jared Taylor. Let me quote him at length on the issue of what we're talking about here. Every year, American police officers have about 370 million contacts with civilians. Most of the time, nothing happens. But 12 to 13 million times a year, the police make an arrest. How often does this lead to the death of an unarmed black person? We know the number, thanks to a detailed Washington Post database of every killing by the police. What's your guess as to the number of unarmed blacks killed by the police every year? 100? 300? Last year, the figure was 9. The number's going down, not up. 2015, police killed 38 unarmed blacks. In 2017, it was 21. What about whites? Last year, police killed 19 unarmed whites, in addition to 9 unarmed blacks. We know the number of black and white people arrested every year, so it's possible to make an interesting calculation. Chances of being unarmed, arrested, and then killed by the police are higher for whites than blacks. For both races, they're extremely rare. One out of every 292,000 arrests for blacks, and one out of every 283,000 arrests for whites. This is hardly what we would expect from the way the media are reporting these deaths. What about the people who police kill who are armed? Since 2015, when the Post began tracking these numbers, the police have killed about 1,000 people a year. Every year, about a quarter of them are black. This is about twice their share in the population, which is 13%. Is this proof of racism? No. The more likely explanation is that blacks are more likely than whites to act violent, aggressively, and to give the police no choice but to shoot them. In 2018, the most recent year for which we have any statistics, blacks accounted for 37% of all arrests for violent crimes, 54% of all arrests for robbery, 53% of all arrests for murder. With so many blacks involved in this kind of violent crime, that blacks should account for 25% of the people killed by the police seem like a surprisingly low figure. Not to mention the fact that every year criminals kill about 120 to 150 police officers. We know this from the FBI table. Every year on average, 35% of officers are killed by blacks. So to repeat, blacks are 13% of the population and account for 25% of the people killed by cops. But if the police were killing them in proportion to their threatening, violent criminal behavior, there would be a much greater percentage of the people killed by the police. In other words, the cops are being very restrained. Now, we know that the cops can't do their job. It's impossible to be a policeman in a black area today. Everything you do is going to be questioned, and these police reforms, which are nonsensical, will lead to just the institutionalization of black violence and black rioting. Some of you may have heard of Ronald Fryer. He's a black economist, the youngest person ever to get tenure at Harvard. After the deaths of Michael Brown and Freddie Gray, he did his own work on the use of deadly force by the police, and he compared 10 big city police departments. He detailed a study of 1,332 police shootings, and he carefully compared the circumstances of each killing, and he found zero evidence of police bias. If anything, the police were more likely to shoot at non-threatening whites than non-threatening blacks. And he said, and I quote, "This was the most surprising research result of my career." Yeah, of course they could kill unarmed whites. No one's going to kill them for it. The fact that this policeman, or the guy standing in for him, was staring right into the camera, knew exactly what he was doing, is absurd. The knee hold was legitimate. It was not breaking off his windpipe. And he wouldn't be doing this in public, out in the open air, if it wasn't legit, if he had any intent. And for that reason, he may very well get off, assuming the trial was going to be fair. But what it comes down to then is that race is a profound biological reality. Now, I don't believe the idea that we have genetic predispositions to these things. I do not believe that. My definition of racism always has been racism is somebody who believes that the genetic racial inheritance predisposes somebody to certain types of violent behaviors or, you know, bad behaviors in general. And therefore, they have no control over it. This I reject. That doesn't mean that race isn't a profound reality. But in the U.S., blacks have largely taken over the major cities, driving whites out. And all state police bureaus and the FBI agree that, blacks commit robbery at roughly 10 times the white rate. They're 50 times more likely to commit a violent crime against a white than vice versa. These aren't my opinions. These are facts. There are radical distinctions in things like hormones, body compression, bones, brains, development rates, cognition, and everything else. They persist into adulthood. These are all differences that race manifests. Black men marry white women more than four times the reverse. So blacks have taken the cities, the culture, and dominate the history. They also take the woman as booty. Whitney says this in 1999. At the same time, there are four times as many marriages between black men and white women as between white men and black women. Like any conquering group, the winners are taking the property, the land, and the women. But perhaps the most incontrovertible evidence of dominance is the fact that blacks can work openly for black empowerment. They complain about whites and get a sympathetic reception. Whites, on the other hand, are not permitted to discuss their own dispossession. And that is true, and that's not an opinion. You could go do that right now. Go off into any public space and talk about white disposition and white dispossession and how blacks are privileged, etc. And see what happens to you. Still, most intelligence and rates of adult success are based on genetics. But we also know that intelligence and as I said, basic success are genetic to a great extent. Black Americans are four times more likely to have an IQ of under 75. Whites are 30 times more likely to have an IQ over 135. Those with an IQ between 75 and 90 are 88 times more likely to drop out of school. They're 7 times more likely to go to prison, or at given times more likely to live in poverty. These things aren't based on personal choice to a great extent. Racial violence and division have tortured this country. Most white Americans in 1850 were poor farmers, just one step away from slavery. The Irish were chattel slaves for a while. Black America is encouraged to act in a racial manner, using a race as their main focus. Whites cannot use race as an issue. If they do, they'll be attacked. At the same time, the movement to end segregation condemned this very same kind of stereotyping, demanding that character, not race, matter most. Remember the George Zimmerman case, one of the most outrageous media manipulations since Rodney King. George Zimmerman, of course, was not white, but the media said he was over and over and over again. Only much later was he called Hispanic. The media deliberately misquoted him many times to inflame non-whites. For example, they reported that he called Martin an effing coon, but the tapes clearly have him saying it's effing cold. NBC fired a producer who manipulated a tape to suggest that Zimmerman's sole purpose was race baiting, and Zimmerman is suing NBC. But this is nothing new. But you have even for more information, you have the National Incident-Based Reporting System, which collects records from almost 5,000 police agencies in 23 states, as well as the Bureau of Justice Statistics and the FBI, all say the same thing. At the same time, blacks are 600% more likely to be victims of murder. Blacks are more likely blacks were more than 700% more likely to be perpetrator of a murder than whites. Yet all these agencies do not necessarily separate Hispanic from white. So the BJS claim that all American homicides, 45.8% are committed by whites, that also includes Hispanics. Not to mention the fact that about 10% of America's gang members are white. And I believe that to get that figure, they have to bring in bikers and things. These are not criminal groups. Gangs we're talking about are inherently criminal organizations. But there are roughly 200,000 interracial crimes committed every year. About 85% are committed by non-whites against whites, according to the National Crime Victimization Survey, which is also sponsored by the BJS. Thomas Sowell, you all probably know him, says this I think it was in 2012. Similar episodes of unprovoked violence by young black gangs against white people chosen at random on beaches, in shopping malls, or in other public places have occurred in Philadelphia, New York, Denver, Chicago, Cleveland, Washington, Los Angeles, and other places across the country. Both the authorities and the media tend to try to sweep these episodes under the rug. Sowell also authored a piece about anti-white race riots, suppressed by media sources, citing the book, I think many of you know it, White Girl Bleed a Lot, The Return of Race, Riots to America, by Flaherty. The number of mob attacks against whites is constant and it's increasing, but has zero media coverage. Flaherty's book details a huge number of mob acts against whites by blacks that receive little or no press coverage in 50 states, including several hundred incidents on the 4th of July alone. No major book publisher would touch it, despite the fact that it would be a big seller. It's unmentionable. Poor whites score much higher on the SAT than wealthy black students. None of the defensive slogans explain any of this. I hate to say it, but if non-whites were removed from New York City, this violent crime would disappear, almost disappear. Cool. Can you imagine what the city would look like then? But the more research that goes into issues like IQ, the worse it seems to get for them. The left always likes to claim that they're pro-science until we get into this area. Then all of a sudden, they want nothing to do with it. But scientists have been attacked and fired for mentioning this because, of course, you know, this is a white supremacist country. That's what white supremacists do. Riots have broken out at their homes. As of July, by July 2017, dozens of speakers espousing these views have been violently shut down by well-organized mobs. Heather McDonald, who I've cited many times in the past, was nearly killed when she was to speak at Claremont College in 2017 on black crime. It proves that the left lives in an academic bubble. These professors have never heard the racial realist position put competently before. Even scholars like, you know, McMurray, they refuse to make any racial connection, though it obviously exists. And protesters scream things like, McDonald seeks mass incarceration of blacks, exclusively because their skin color is different. And this hysterical violence is well-financed. And nothing will happen to them. There's no doubt that blacks have a massively lower IQ than whites and Asians. It's also undeniable that IQ scores are essential predictors for financial and social success, at least in certain areas. All they can do is shut us down in retaliation. Prior to colonization, Africa never created civilization. The egalitarian myth is enforced at the barrel of a gun. The threat of violence against anyone who disagrees is real. And of course, I have experienced it personally, as have many of you. So much for white supremacy. We hear a lot about racial profiling. That only works if white and black crime rates are the same. The ACLU put out several papers attacking the LAPD. But the real issue is that there's no benchmark by which you can measure too many if one group are stopped and frisked. Using population figures is flawed for a whole bunch of reasons. There's no explanation for why these people were stopped unless one argues that they were pulled over for no reason, which no one claims, or that poor driving is more common in non-white communities. When they pulled over Rodney King, he was beating up his girlfriend. That's why he was driving erratically. And none of these black people would ever want to live next to these people. The crime in Los Angeles is gang-related. Out of 463 identified gangs, 11 are white. I don't know who these white gangs are. I have the feeling that they're invented. But Hispanics alone have 246 gangs with almost 22,000 members. The city of Los Angeles and the California Department of Justice refuse to collect demographic information on these guys after 2005, which of course begs an explanation. The LAPD has itself maybe 9,000 members, and whites make up really only about 30% of LA's urban population anyway. The refusal to deal with gang demographics makes the whole profiling issue nonsensical. But you can't talk about this in the university. Even more, the ACLU's definition of minority neighborhood is also a problem. But let me read to you what the ACLU says. This is a few years ago. What the ACLU said about the LAPD. But, as emphasized by the analysis report, these substantial and statistically significant racial disparity estimates by themselves do not provide conclusive or incontrovertible evidence that the LAPD engaged in race contingent profiling or even that policing decisions produce unjust disparate impacts. More importantly, the post-stop regressions in this report were not able to account or control for the race-specific criminality of the people who were stopped or the race-specific crime rates in the areas from where these stops occurred. Now that's telling, since it does not connect stopping and frisking and all the results with race-based crime or the areas. It doesn't say why they were pulled over. Using population figures doesn't tell us anything. You know, Hollywood has a low black population, but it does have a lot of clubs that attract black and Hispanic gang members. But that issue isn't really dealt with. Relative to the gang population, blacks and Hispanics are stopped less than an unbiased law enforcement officer should be. The very fact the LAPD is mostly non-white automatically means the report is flawed, as it stands. It doesn't prove what the authors wanted it to. Skin color is assumed to be the only criterion, which ruins the statistical importance of the report anyway. It deals only with consenting searches, by the way, and doesn't deal with searches where there's no race was listed or searches where that were denied. So the ACLU and these other groups who got this whole racial profiling thing started erred in many ways. But their theories only work if we assume that cops, you know, want riots and want to torment black people for some reason, even though they're not generally white in Los Angeles, and that crime rates are the same. They're talking about defunding the police in a country with 30,000 gangs, with a membership of 1.4 million active members, and they are militarized. Since 2009, gang membership has increased by 40%. And they're encouraged to get employment in military law enforcement fields. With this one's structure, they have an entire language of their own. Things get rough, the ACLU is there to bail them out. Now they're forming alliances with each other, not just domestically, but over the border, with the narcotic gangs in Mexico. According to the FBI, gangs have formed disciplined paramilitary units, and they've infiltrated law enforcement, and have more money now than ever. Precisely at a time where police budgets are being cut, and in many cases, the police are going to be dissolved, or at least they have no legitimacy in the eyes of the city council. In California, the ratio of law enforcement to gang members is 1 to 8. In Texas, it's between either 1 to 4 or 1 to 6. So they're outnumbered no matter what. This is why the police are militarized, because they're fighting a military war with one hand tied behind their back most of the time. But the FBI report on them says gang members armed with high-powered weapons and knowledge and expertise acquired from employment in law enforcement, corrections, and military will likely pose an increasing nationwide threat as they employ these tactics and weapons against law enforcement officials, rival gangs, and civilians. Associates, friends, and family members of gangs will continue to play a pivotal role in infiltration and acquisition of sensitive information. The police seem to have no voice here. They seem to lack the outrage that other groups so targeted would ever show. The police are shown every day to be nothing more than thugs, beating up innocent non-whites for no reason, knowing full well what's going to happen as a result. The FBI says, conversely, limited resources and budget cuts have reportedly constrained many law enforcement agencies' ability to target and dismantle gangs in their jurisdiction. Law enforcement officials nationwide report that budget issues have affected their agency's gang unit or task force, and subsequently their ability to combat gangs in their region. The ACLU then says, overreaction to gang problems, which is driven by the assumption that those who associate with known gang members must be involved in criminal activity, even in the absence of concrete evidence that this is the case. This includes illegal mass stops and arrests, demanding photo IDs from young men based on their race and dress instead of on their criminal conduct. So associates of violent street gangs aren't necessarily involved in criminal activity, according to these people. So this goes back many years. The ACLU is demanding control over police, lest they be too brutal to gang members. They also advocate dismantling police intelligence units and to reduce physical force against criminals to the absolute minimum. That's going to go even lower now. You may have heard the so-called community spy on the police and keep them in line. Now they're talking about community, which is another word for Antifa, leftist activists, psychologists, doing the police work, which means it would be handed over to the gang. Every city would be handed over to the gangs with no problem. Remember, the ACLU is financed by the Rockefeller Foundation and Carnegie Institute. So it shows that all of this has been backed by the elitist society for a very, very, very long time. It's very rare that the policeman's point of view was ever mentioned. The cops have no interest in stirring up trouble when they can't handle the trouble they already have. Law enforcement is put in an impossible position. They're blamed when they act too harsh. They blame when they were too lenient. Gangs are mostly non-white, but the mere utterance of that fact can destroy careers. So law enforcement has to pretend that crime is colorblind. Any interaction with a non-white suspect has potential to destroy a career or even set off a riot that might last for days. So the police, insecure, underfunded, overworked, doesn't seem to have any means of fighting back. If the press doesn't report it, it doesn't exist. as I come to the end of this, some of you have asked me where the money has come from. These demonstrations are expensive. Obviously, these people don't work. They're transported from place to place. There's bail money available. There's food and lodging. And everything that you would need to organize a movement. It doesn't happen spontaneously. No revolution like this happens spontaneously. So who's footing the bill? Well, Sony Music just sent them $100 million. Walmart, another $100 million. Warner Music, Nike, Alphabet, Google sent $1 million to each for the Center of Policing Equity, the Equal Justice Initiative, another $12 million there. Facebook sent $10 million. Target sent money to the National Urban League and the African American Leadership Forum. Verizon sent a huge amount, $10 million, to the National Action Network, Leadership Conference for Civil and Human Rights, Rainbow Push, National Coalition for Black Civic Participation. This is all the same thing. Goldman Sachs, $10 million. Support leading organizations addressing racial injustice, structural inequity, and economic disparity, is what their donation said. Spotify, $10 million. Disney, $5 million. Procter & Gamble, to all these groups, $5 million. Cisco, to Black Lives Matter specifically, $5 million. Lego, $4 million. Microsoft, to Black Lives Matter specifically, $1.25 million. There's a lot more there. Starbucks, same thing, $1.25 million. McDonald's sent $1 million. It doesn't say where swiftly it's going. This is where it comes from. This is where the money comes from. It's always private sector. It's not Soros. It comes from the entire gamut of American corporate power. You know, Levi's, as always, $100,000 to the ACLU. Etsy, $500,000 to the Equal Justice Initiative. And again, for this specific cause, to create the organizations that are now riding in the street and maintain them. That's all this is. Airbnb, $500,000 to Black Lives Matter. Anastasia, Beverly Hills Fashions, $1 million pledged. Bad Robot Productions, this film studio involved in Star Wars and Mission Impossible. $10 million there. BTS, a Korean pop group, $1 million. Cisco Electronics, $5 million to BLM. Democracy Alliance, which is a Soros link group, $500 million dollars total. Ford Foundation, of course. Soros' Open Society Foundation. Pokemon Company, $100,000. Spanx, $100,000. These are explicitly going to Black Lives Matter. So I want to remind you to stop repeating the Soros mantra. The entire corporate elite of the Western world have been financing this movement. Police are now forbidden to do their jobs. Most violent crime will remain unpunished. Add to this the mass release of felons to the streets from prison. It's clear that revolutionary conspiracy is the only explanation. The state fully supports the destruction of police and white property, and all criticism of the movement will be censored. This hasn't happened before. But this is also the society based on systemic racism. Black Lives Matter is being financed by, of course, Soros, Rob Stein, Taco Bell, Rob McKay, Norman Lear, Anna Berger, the Rockefeller Family Fund. This is an elite financed attack. Gregory Hood wrote just a few days ago, the George Floyd riots are a manufactured crisis, but the leader of America's flagship conservative magazine is looking for ways to surrender. Rich Lowry recently endorsed removing Confederate statues and scorned the lost cause. Secession was a traitorous act that threatened to destroy American nation, he wrote, to create a rump republic built on slavery and to make the impossible the subsequent rise of the U.S. He dismissed fears that woke iconoclasm would create a slippery slope and that first Jefferson Davis, ultimately George Washington, this feeling, he said, is a mistake. I think right after he said that, statues of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson came down, which of course he knew. He knows that in order to function, you have to support the official ideology, which in this white supremacist society is Black Lives Matter. And you have to attack yourself. Reality itself is under attack. Police on their knees are called oppressors. Whites are being beaten all over the place with no consequences. This somehow means that whites rule this society. Violent black criminals being put away is another definition of racism. I wanted to get into the CHOP. Let me get into it just briefly. All right, I mean, it's been romanticized beyond belief by the press, MSM in particular. They've romanticized it as a utopia. But the truth is that all right-wing groups, from Ruby Ridge to the Covenant Sword, Arm of the Lord, and Aryan Nations, have come under siege for these very same issues. Posse Comitatus was attacked by federal forces and destroyed. Again, same thing. Right-wing organizations are destroyed immediately. Left-wing organizations can take over entire cities and get financed as a result. And, you know, the Rayshard Brooks case, is being misrepresented. Of course, he resisted arrest for DUI. He punched and knocked down two police officers, stole a taser from one of them, and fired it at one of them. And after all this happened, the police shoot, Brooks. But then, just a few nights ago, they reached the gates of the White House, probably the most secure place on earth, and chipped away at the barriers piece by piece while law enforcement struggled to respond. They could never have gotten that close unless everyone was in on it. What do the Republicans do? They passed a resolution placing sanctions on Syria. Well, over the last 5 years, black American satisfaction with their local police departments has gone up from 50% to 72%. So I'm pretty sure these groups don't speak for black America. But black America needs to stop celebrating criminals and scumbags. Men whose lives, frankly, don't matter because of how they live them, Floyd being one. Anyway, thank you everyone for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.